The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vora.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. My first guest today is Sean Haw. He's running for Senate. You can learn more about his campaign at seanhaw.com. And the first name that's spelled S-E-A-N-H-A-U-G-H. Sean, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, I want to talk to you about the minimum wage. We have folks across the country that say we need a $10, $15 minimum wage. But we have so many people saying the opposite, that we actually need to lower or, in fact, eliminate the minimum wage. What are your perspectives on that?
Well, I happen to have a minimum wage job. I deliver pizza for a living. Mm-hmm. So I get paid minimum wage, and I get something significantly less than that when I'm out on a delivery on the notion that I'll get tips to make up for it. I can tell you that raising the minimum wage isn't going to help me. I talk to people in my store, and they get it too. I was talking to one fellow last year, and this is like 21-year-old guy. He dropped out of high school, but he got it. I suggested, well, gosh, if the minimum wage goes up to $15, I wonder how many of us are still going to have jobs here. And he said, oh, no, that's not going to happen. What's going to happen is the prices are just going to go up. You know, gas will be $5 a gallon, and everything will be more expensive at the grocery store, and we'll still be in the same boat. You know, it's if you've read your Greek mythology or Dante, then you know about the curse of this poor fellow Sisyphus, who was doomed to roll a rock uphill for all eternity, and then as soon as he got the rock up to the top of the hill, it would roll back down. And that's exactly an exact description of the minimum wage. It's like, well, there's an underlying problem here, which is that our money just doesn't go as far as it used to. And what we really need to do, if we want to restore the buying power of workers' wages, is to make sure, that their dollars go as far as they did last year.
And that's an extremely important point. I mean, the connections between the minimum wage and, you know, monetary policy, inflationary monetary policy are very clear, which suggests that if you just nominally increase something, that doesn't mean you've increased the labor value, the purchasing power. Any of those things haven't correspondingly increased.
Right. Our current monetary policy is built on 2 to 3% inflation. And that is a direct transfer of wealth from people who are earning money to the people who are collecting it on behalf of the government. So we have to really change this monetary policy, because otherwise, yeah, sure, if we could jack up the minimum wage to $15 and then everything will be great. But as inflation keeps eating away at the value of our money, well, then it won't be long before we have to raise it to $17 or $20. And so the minimum wage really is just a Band-Aid that solves nothing.
Let's talk about some of the other aspects of this. What about the reverse? What happens if we eliminate the minimum wage entirely, get rid of the federal minimum wage laws and have just no minimum wage of any kind? What are the results of something like that?
Well, one thing is that you create a whole lot of jobs. I mean, a lot of this notion is predicated on people only having full-time work. I mean, it used to be that there were a lot of different kinds of jobs that just didn't pay that well, but you could get to either get some experience or get your foot in the door of the working world, or simply something that just suits your own needs for whatever your lifestyle is. One thing I guess I'll just leave it at that for right now.
And that's, that's like a really interesting thing. I mean, there are other considerations that you have besides wage. I mean, you have flexibility, you have location, you have the amount of difficulty and concentration required for a job. I mean, sometimes, as a night desk clerk at an apartment might not pay that much, but it also has the benefit of if you like to stay up late at night and you can want to read for 8 hours, you don't really have to do very much. And while it doesn't pay as much, something like that has these other benefits. So there are absolutely.
I mean, you're really singing my song here, because I keep the pizza delivery job precisely because I enjoy it. I've had a lot of different jobs before, some fairly high-powered, decently paying and high-pressure jobs, and they have their own kind of satisfaction for sure. Mm-hmm. And the money was nice. But I really just get such great satisfaction out of delivering pizza that I've decided to keep the job, even though I could probably get something that's better paying. And I am old enough now to remember when the kind of money that I'm making delivering pizza would be enough to take care of your entire family. One full-time average job would give a person enough to take care of a family of four or five. And right now I'm in a situation where that job mostly covers the monthly expenses for me and my wife. But like a lot of Americans, we have to find some other streams of income just to keep our heads above water.
Now, what's especially interesting that you mentioned is there are two types of inflation that we're seeing here. And the one that we talk about the most is this sort of nominal inflation that says, like, that we print too much money, or the Federal Reserve injects too much money, or whatever. And so that kind of decreases the value of a dollar. But we're seeing a second type of inflation, which is saying that a given amount of work gets you less things. So if we even take the nominal money out of the equation, a given amount of work gets you less. And there's a strong argument to be made that that is because the government is using the value of that labor for insane and destructive purposes. If you're elected Senate, do you think that you'll be working to scale back or even eliminate some of those types of expenditures?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to me, the beginning of reforming our monetary policy in order to allow people to keep all of the wealth that they generate, the real solution here is to let people keep all the money that they earn and to make sure that that money retains its value over time. So the very first thing that I would want to do, and I'd be totally concentrating on as a United States Senator, is to reduce the size and scope of government that takes such a huge bite out of our economy. The total cut that government takes out of our economy is 38% of the GDP. And of that, as the federal government takes out 22.5%, almost a quarter of our wealth goes to pay for government and for so many things that government either is wasting money on or does not need to do, that people who are able to keep their own money would be able to take care of far more efficiently. So, reducing the size and scope of government is totally at the root of allowing people to have more money from, less work, really, or the same amount of work, and know that money, that they can save that money, and that is going to still be useful to them when it's time for them to use it.
Now, what is really electrifying about that I'm seeing from so many candidates is that I think a lot of libertarian candidates have really driven home this idea that it's not just that government buys things less efficiently than you would, for example, maybe they pay for certain things that you use, but they pay way more than you normally would, but that they actually spend a lot of our money on things that you would never support. In fact, that you would actively work to prevent. And what at the top of that list for me is a lot of the military stuff. Where do you come down on things like that?
Oh, it's not just that your average taxpayer wouldn't pay for it. A lot of times it's the Department of Defense itself that says, we don't need this. This is a boondoggle or it's not going to work and we really don't need it. But these senators or these people in Congress keep voting for these things anyway against the advice of their own people because they want to bring the pork home. Now, I have this problem here in North Carolina. I'm running against Richard Burr, and he has completely set aside any notion of actual national security in favor of bringing the military bacon home to this very heavily military state. And it's, you know, and when you have war simply as a jobs and manufacturing program by the government, well, that just leads to perpetual war. The perpetual war we have now. And like I say, it places some very parochial interests of short-term money-making ahead of peace and security. So it's this extra military spending is not just albatross around the neck of our economy. It also makes the rest of the world more unstable. And hurts the economy in that way as well.
Now, I think that really rings true for just so many people, and I think that more and more people are really looking for senators that are going to work to just dramatically reduce that. Sean, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. If somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, where should they go?
Well, you did mention my website. I appreciate it. SeanHaugh.com. That's SeanHaugh. I'm active on Twitter at Emperor Sean, on Facebook, Haw for Senate. Mm-hmm. And I also have a Tumblr where I'm going to be going into video production soon. I'll start having new YouTube videos for my 2016 campaign. And I'm putting the first drafts of those scripts now on my Tumblr blog, which is also Emperor Sean.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in this election.
Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Have fun.
Now, guys, what you've seen is that just one person who has the discipline, who has the dedication as the principal, can make a pretty big difference in election cycles, as Sean certainly did last election cycle, and I know that he is doing the same thing this election cycle. Here's the thing. If all of us do what Sean is doing, even if you do half of what Sean is doing, even if you do a tenth of what Sean is doing, it makes a really big difference. It brings, first, media attention to libertarian ideas. It puts pressure on the other parties to really change their act and really injects the ideas of cutting government into the political marketplace where the only other ideas are always growing government. And if you're ready to do that, please go to lp.org/states. See how to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state, or even better, learn how to run for office. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We just finished talking with Sean Haugh, who's running for Senate. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco.
Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York, Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Guys, this week I had so many Republicans tell me the same thing. And I've had Republicans tell me the same thing last week and the week before, and honestly, probably in the last 52 weeks, at least one, if not more, have basically told me the same thing, which is that what we need to do is, quote, infiltrate the Republican Party. I mentioned this in the show last week, but I really think it needs to be mentioned again because it is so ridiculous. When you hear Republicans telling you to infiltrate something, you got to know they're trying to manipulate you. If you hear Republican leaders who care nothing about actually cutting government, who just want to get votes so they can continue funding their lobbyist nonsense, you know they're just manipulating you. Now, I want to settle this at this point, once and for all. I want to explain to any Republican, to any Democrat listening, what the word infiltrate means and what the word does not mean. Here's what infiltrating the Republican Party looks like, or here's what infiltrating the Democratic Party looks like. The first phase of this, you basically do what? You get involved at some level in the Republican Party. And that means you get involved at whatever, you know, the county level, state level, etc. The next thing that you do is you immediately start funneling strategic information to the Libertarian Party. That's what infiltrate means. When a Russian spy infiltrates the U.S. government, or when a U.S. spy infiltrates the Russian government, start funneling information. The next thing that you do when you infiltrate is that you try to get to a level where you can cause some damage, do some sabotage. In other words, for example, you accidentally forget to submit a form that the Republican Party needs to be on the ballot. You, for example, might take it even a step farther and make some other kind of a critical error. Maybe you intentionally make a public comment that makes the party look stupid. You could take it to the next level. You can get to a slightly higher level, and you can literally get to a position of some sort of official representative level. And that means you might be a county chair or a state chair or whatever. And what you can do is at a very critical moment in an election cycle, you can announce to the whole state, to the whole country, that you no longer can support the Republican Party and that you have no choice but to join the Libertarian Party. Let me explain that. I mean, that's what infiltrating looks like. And let me ask this question. Do you think the Democrats or Republicans actually want you to do that? That's the definition of infiltrating. Everything I just said is what infiltrating means. How do I know? Republicans have tried to infiltrate the Libertarian Party. Some of them have done it quite successfully. In fact, one of the Republicans, Wayne Allen Root, a few years ago, infiltrated the Libertarian National Committee. Now, the thing to understand about this is not that I'm saying that the best way to do politics is going around infiltrating other parties. I mean, honestly, I think that's kind of childish. What I'm trying to say is that is what the word means. What Democrats and Republicans want you to think infiltrate means has absolutely nothing to do with the word infiltrate. Here's what they want you to do. They want you to first register Republican or register Democrat. Then they want you to support whatever candidate, you know, seems the most libertarian-ish. And, you know, in this election cycle, it would be Rand Paul. Then they want you to, when that libertarian-ish candidate eventually loses the nomination, they want you to then support whichever one's left. In this case, you know, Trump or Cruz. That is not infiltrating the party. That's just joining the party. There's nothing. That's not infiltrating. That's just joining. That's what the word means. When a Democrat or a Republican tells you to infiltrate their party, you can't take that seriously. Unless you're actually going to actually infiltrate it. Now the question is, what is it that they're so worried about? I mean, why do they spend so much time trying to get us to infiltrate their party? I mean, there's just not that many. I mean, there's not that many registered libertarians in most states. I mean, our numbers are growing high. They're bigger than they've ever been in history. But it wouldn't really be logical for Republicans to spend as much time, or for Democrats to spend as much time as they do, trying to get a relatively small percentage of libertarians. I mean, it's only a small percentage of libertarians that even listen to this to do this. I mean, we're talking about just such a tiny number of people. Why would they bother? I mean, why would you possibly put that kind of effort in to just recruit this tiny number of people, where with half that effort, you could probably recruit hundreds and thousands of social conservatives who would be happy to join the Republican Party? Why do they do it? I think the answer is real simple. Our message is powerful, and our message is a direct and immediate threat to the Republican and Democrat status quo. If we do the things that we want to do, it threatens the people that control those parties. For example, if we work to eliminate the income tax, so many libertarian candidates have pledged to do, what does that mean? That means that the Democrats and Republicans no longer have the source of revenue that they use to give special favors to the lobbyists that control them. If we end the war on drugs, it means that they have to massively scale back, you know, things like the DEA. They have to get, you know, they no longer going to get support from police and prison unions. They're going to really have problems hit. Now, the good thing about that is each of those things help everybody else. I mean, all those things help Democratic voters. They might not help the DNC, but they help Democratic voters. You know, we end the war on drugs. That helps Democratic voters because they don't have to worry about as much violence. It means we're going to reduce violence. We're going to reduce cartel violence. We're going to make sure that drug businesses can settle disputes in court rather than having to resort to street violence. It means we're going to reduce the violence caused by, you know, SWAT teams and things like that. It's good for everyone else. It's just not really good for the politically connected interests that control the Democratic and Republican parties. Now, I know that many of you, like me, are just itching. We are just ready for election day. I can't wait for election day. I cannot wait to first just get out there first thing in the morning and vote for every libertarian that I can. And then vote for every ballot initiative that cuts government. I can't wait to do that. I mean, I'm really looking forward to doing that. But you know what? There's something that you can actually do right now. You can do it right this second. If you haven't already done it, I mean, if you already have done it, then you know, maybe you can't. But one thing that you can do right now is you can register libertarian. Registering libertarian is almost as powerful as voting libertarian. In fact, many experts argue that it's even more powerful than voting libertarian. There's a few reasons why. When you register libertarian, rather than instead of infiltrating, quote, infiltrating Republican or Democratic parties, which just does nothing but except for give them some support, when you register a libertarian, you actually can change the laws in a lot of states. People don't realize that. They don't realize that the Libertarian Party right now spends the majority of its resources just fighting legal battles to stay on the ballot. They don't realize that the majority of our resources go in to just trying to fight legal battles or collect petition signatures just to stay on the ballot. Democrats and Republicans don't want to let you know that. I mean, the biggest offenders in this, actually, the Democrats are some of the biggest offenders in certain states. in Maryland is the Democrats that try to do all kinds of just ridiculous shenanigans to try to keep the Libertarian Party off the ballot. Did you know that in Maryland that you need to collect 10,000 or so signatures? If somebody signs their name, and when they write their name, if they don't include their middle initial and they do have the middle initial in their voter registration card, that means that that signature is invalidated. That's the law that's been passed in Maryland by the Democratic legislature. And that person can't sign another petition during that election cycle. The great news is this. While those kind of shenanigans go on in many states, if there's enough Libertarian registered voters in most states, Libertarian Party doesn't have to do that at all. And that's money we can spend on radio ads, TV ads, direct mail, campaign support, affiliate support. The more registered Libertarians we have, the more we can spend our resources on the kind of great outreach, new websites, promotion, campaign improvement, the more we can spend on that. And all it takes is just registering Libertarian. Now, I know some of you guys wanted to vote for Rand Paul in the Republican primary, and maybe an area of disagreement, but I can understand the logic. But guess what? The Republican primary is over. The Democratic primary is over. Right now, there's nothing to lose by registering Libertarian, and there's everything to gain. We haven't even done – there's many of these ballot and access drives and things. Some of them we haven't even done yet. And we're still going to have to do it in the future. If you register Libertarian, that could be money in this election cycle right now that we can use to fight big government, that we can use to cut government, that we can use to put pressure on the Democratic and Republican candidates to cut government, to repeal laws, to get out of our way. And it just takes a second. You can do it online in most states. If you're ready to do that, if you're ready to take that important step of registering Libertarian, please go to lp.org. Just follow the links to register to vote. If you want the direct link, it's lp.org/actions/register to vote. And that tiny little step can make such a huge difference. Now, right now, we're going to come back just in a second with our next candidate. But really, there's nothing more important than registering to vote. And there's nothing that's going to help the Libertarian Party more than that. It's going to help the Libertarian Party, even if you do real infiltration and, get smuggled Republican or Democratic secrets. Registering to vote is actually going to be much more useful than that. And it's going to do way more than the pretend infiltration that the Democrats and Republicans want you to do. All right, we'll be right back in just a second with our next guest. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you are listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Psych Up Live with host Dr. Suzanne Phillips is an insider's glimpse at a life from a psychological perspective. It's a look at what matters to us. Why do we laugh? How do we cope with stress? Are men and women really that different? What is it about our relationships? How are they formed? How they work out? And why they sometimes don't? Every week is something new to engage you. Psych Up Live is heard every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll turn up your perspective on life.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show,
please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. My next guest is Bob Boyle. He is running for Iowa House District 20. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
So let's talk about, you know, we talked a little bit about federal politics with Sean Hall in the first segment. I want to talk about the state, and I want to talk about ways in which we can downsize or dismantle or just get rid of some regulations. What are some of your priorities in Iowa?
All of the above and a lot more.
All right, let's start talking. Let's start talking with let's talk about the what are some of the departments that could use some cuts or could just be tossed entirely out.
For my money, at both the state and federal level, the Department of Education is not going to happen. But if I had a wish list, that would be. What right up near the top.
Now that's a big one for a lot of people. I've been hearing that from, you know, it's for the various departments that I hear about on this show, and we talk about a lot of them. That's the one that comes up so much, and I think that it's really hit a very personal nerve with a lot of people. Now, for you, what do you think are the benefits? You know, what benefits would we see if we got rid of, say, both the federal and the state level Department of Education?
Well, first of all, billions of dollars saved that could be spent on infrastructure and defense, the things that government is rightfully supposed to be providing for us. But we'd get a better education. Am I wrong? The Department of Education was established 1970-ish under Nixon. I can't quite remember. But
the Department of Education, I believe, was established under Carter. And interestingly, even Reagan said he was going to try to get rid of it.
Right, and he couldn't. He could. The politics just were not such that Reagan by himself could not do it. And he did say, and that's very unfortunate. But the politics, unfortunate, you know, and that's part of that's why we have libertarians. We have to change politics as usual. But. Let's just say Carter. Let's say Carter, Nixon, just a few years apart. Does anybody out there really believe that for the billions and billions of dollars that have been spent since the Federal Department of Education was established that we're getting a better product out of the schools? Seriously.
Yeah.
I think every study, and I don't care from which side it comes from, shows otherwise.
So now let's talk about, you know, what I mean, to me, one of the big immediate benefits is that you just get, you know, people say regulation is almost by definition the mediocre instructing the excellent on what to do. And I think in education, that's like the most, that's just proven so true, especially recently. You know, we have all these just bizarre government curricula coming out that just get in the way of education. And I think you're right, that if we get rid of it, we're going to see better education. I mean, no one's going to make something worse.
Vocal control, which is where it should be. Parents should be able to be involved in the education of their children instead of going out to a very large school district. Parents... You know, the establishment, the school districts, they like to say, well, the parents don't get involved. We give them an opportunity. Well, it's so discouraging to get involved that they are not really encouraged. And when they do get involved, they say, oh, you really don't understand. It's just like Congress and the state legislature. You don't understand how politics works. We can't do that. Let me give you a quick quote here. I don't know where it came from. But it touches on what you just said. Most of us understand the obvious, that common people have less knowledge and education than the ruling class, but infinitely more common sense. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know who said that. I wrote it down when I heard it. But it just touches, the mediocre educating our kids is, again, I will go to statistics. People like numbers. Every study I've ever read shows that the education schools in the colleges and universities are graduating with much lower grade point averages than the people I like to make fun of, the athletes, the jocks, any other department. We're not getting the brightest and best in our teaching because the government runs it.
And yeah, you know, I can certainly speak to that. You know, as an educator, when I first started out in education, I had a choice. I mean, I could have gotten a job with the public school system, or I chose to set out on my own and start my own business. But it wasn't just like I was like, man, I want to make more money. I mean, if I purely wanted to make money, I would have gone to finance. I was an econ major. The big thing that for me was like, I just don't want to do anything. This is just stupid. And I was, you know, I looked at the curriculum, looked at their plan. I'm like, yeah, this is dumb. I will not teach math this way. It's nonsense.
And the sad part is that there are too many teachers who don't even realize how, as you using your word, stupid the system is. And they look at the way it's set. They just follow along. This is the curriculum that we expect you to teach. This is the format that we expect you to teach it in. And they just say, okay. Parents have got to be able to control their own children's education. I personally believe that the government has no business being involved in education because, like it or not, it's already happening. They're not teaching what the parents want the children to learn. They're teaching a government line when it comes to, and I don't want to get into conspiracies or anything, but they're teaching what they're told to teach as far as civics and social issues and not what the parents want their children to be learning.
And that's absolutely true. And I don't think you have to go into a conspiracy theory. I mean, for example, it was declassified by the NSA that the Gulf of Tonkin incidents, the things that got us officially into the Vietnam War, one didn't happen at all, and then one the U.S. fired first. I mean, that's been declassified, and that's just publicly available knowledge at this point, and it's publicly available in every single history textbook except for the ones that I always see from my students in their schools.
Exactly, isn't that amazing? And you could cite so many examples where every information source except the public school textbooks will tell you the exact opposite of what's in those public school textbooks. Going back to the Vietnam War, and it doesn't matter where you come down on that, you know, whether you feel it was a necessary war or not, we can talk about other wars that we've been tricked into getting into, but yeah. At the end of the war, we were tricked into believing we were losing, and the truth of the matter is we were not, but people got the line from the press and from everyone else that we were just getting killed. And the fact of the matter is that if we hadn't fought that war politically, it would have probably been over a long time sooner.
Now, what's really interesting, you know, when we look at all these different things, is that we're seeing this general principle that says that it's not just that the government is spending too much of our money on something. It's that they're spending money on things that are just actively destructive. I want to talk a little bit about state level regulation. Now, in Iowa, do you see state level regulations that are expensive to enforce, or at least cost something to enforce, that could be done away with?
I'm not extremely familiar with that, although I can speak to it from my personal experience. I own and operate a small retail business here in Iowa, it's a convenience store, so we have to have inspectors come out because, in theory, you know, we have food. We don't have any. We don't do fast food or refrigerated food or anything like that. But we have, you know, pop and beer and potato chips. You know, junk food stuff. Mm-hmm. As far as the government's concerned, that's food. We have to go through the inspection. It's not extreme. It's not overbearing. But the fact is that they. Every time they come out, they got to find something to justify their existence. The inspectors will come out and tell me that mine is one of the cleanest stores they've ever seen, blah, 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 but they've got to find one little thing just to justify their existence. So that's just from my point of view. It's just, yes, there may be really filthy restaurants and stores out there. But I got off on a bad track there. There's of course all kinds of excessive legislation, and that's not done by the governing bodies, where they create a department that creates a subdepartment that is given the authority to create regulation, which then has the effect of law, and something that has never been before the Iowa House or Senate or the U.S. House or Senate has the effect of law by that some mid-level bureaucrat wrote, and you can end up paying tens and thousands in fines or doing time for something that technically is an illegal law.
Because it's not passed by a legislator, it's just passed by regulation. We see that at the state level and the federal level.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That kind of stuff to me is just downright ridiculous. Now, if you're elected, are you going to do some? Will work towards legislation that prevents that, or works to reduce that the impact of things like that?
Well, first of all, I have to ask you to rephrase your question. The question is when I'm elected.
Oh, okay. When you're elected,
there is no if involved here. I expect to win this election, and not that it'll be easy, but I expect to win. I am. To be very honest, I am, you know what I'm up against. I'll be being the only one in either the Iowa House or Senate that is not a Republican or a Democrat. Yeah, my goal will be to not vote for any spending bills that contain all of this, which means all of them. I don't know how I can vote for any spending bill. Sure, I can introduce legislation, but I'm going to, the way they set these things up, I'm going to be on the back bench. I'm not going to get any committee assignments. But we have to start somewhere, don't we? It has to start with me, and maybe I can get some press time, and maybe I can introduce some bills that get a little airtime on the local news, and maybe next time we can get another libertarian elected. But it's got to start somewhere.
I want to actually talk about some of those specific ideas. Can you stick around for the segment right after this?
Absolutely, sure.
All right, guys, let's talk about that right after this. Guys, right now we're talking to Bob Boyle. He's running for Iowa House District 20. And you've heard the issues and ways in which we want to work to downsize them. We've talked about the benefits of getting the government out of education. We've talked about the ways that just even a single elected official can make a difference. And there are quite a few ways. We're going to talk about them in detail right after this. But I want to talk about the ways in which just even a single candidate can make a difference. Even a single candidate, because here's what happens. When you're running for office, you get a lot of questionnaires. And these questionnaires, for example, put forth by the League of Women Voters, other large organizations, are basically sent to everyone. And that makes the Democrats and Republicans have to push themselves towards a more libertarian direction. If there's a libertarian response saying that I will end the war on drugs, then the Democrat can't just say, I will work towards considering the legalization of, maybe one possible ounce of hemp per, 10,000 people or something like that. If you have libertarians in there saying, I'm going to work to get rid of all gun laws, then the Republican can't just say, I will prevent, these other things, or I will prevent a whole new law. The Republican also says, I'll try to, get rid of some of these gun laws. And that becomes the expectation. That becomes what voters expect of not just that Republican or that Democrat, but of all Republicans and all Democrats. Essentially, libertarians are kind of like that kid in the class who just breaks the curve on the test and forces everybody else to study. When you run for office as a libertarian, you're breaking the curve. You're making those Democrats and Republicans get their acts together. You're making them put some effort in. You're making them pledge to get rid of laws. And if you don't believe me, right now, we have more and more Democrats and Republicans that actually are doing that. And me, I don't think they're going anywhere near far enough, but we can see that they're responding to it because they don't want to be failing when we're breaking that curve. I want you to try to break that curve. And if you're ready to help me break that curve, go to lp.org/states. See how to get involved in the libertarian campaign in your state. Right now, we're talking with Bob Boyle. We're going to be right back and talk with him a little bit more about some of the things that he's going to do if he's elected right after this.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Have you checked out Teen Wealth Radio? It's a show for teens, their parents, and educators. Hosted by Brandy England, along with regular weekly contributors, Teen Wealth Radio will cover the topics that teens need to talk about. Plus, we discuss a book of the week and a movie of the week. And each show will offer a challenge to our teen listeners that they can share on our private Facebook group page. Be sure to tune in to Teen Wealth Radio, live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. We're talking right now with Bob Boyle. He's running for Iowa House District 20. And we're talking about ways in which, when he's elected, ways in which he's going to be able to put some pressure on the other candidates. There's this like unspoken code. There's this code I've seen among Democrats and among Republicans where no one will sponsor a bill that they know is going to be popular among the people, but unpopular among politically connected organizations or among lobbyists or among, you know, various powerful sectors. Would you be willing to break that sort of code of silence on those bills?
I'm not exactly sure what that would be, but obviously, and of course, and I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. Because whatever the issue might be, you've got to get it out there. In other words, whatever it is, and I can't, but just once it's out there, now you've got a conversation going, and I really, really think we need to get that, whatever that issue is, in front of the public so that we can educate more. In other words, the drugs are issue, you know, I think most people would still be against the complete legalization of all drugs because they don't understand the issue. They don't understand the cost involved and the absolute failure of the war on drugs. They just don't understand that. And until we can get a real open conversation out there, not open, but, and I don't mean open, I mean public, so where they can actually hear all sides of the issue. If you were to put it, I think if you put it out to a public vote today, I think the public would vote to strengthen the war on drugs.
Now, what's really interesting is, when I was doing the show, just like even last year, people would often say, it seems weird. A lot of people are really reacting badly. But now more and more people are saying, listen, you know, when I bring it up, ending the war on drugs, there's a surprising amount of support. Maybe not a majority yet, although I do think we'll get there. But, you know, I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying, that once those ideas get out there, it becomes easier to present it the second time around. And by the third or fourth time, it's just obvious. It's just like, yeah, we know that ending the war on drugs and get rid of the violence, we already know about that.
No, you're taking a page right out of the liberals or communist, one drip at a time. You know, get it out there, and it failed. You know, well, Hillary failed with health care. Obama got it through. You know, you got to keep pushing. They have proven that the slippery slope works. It can work in our favor too.
Let's talk about ways in which we can some of the specifics in Iowa. What are some of the things that you might work on, either repealing or downsizing or anything like that? Or what category of things would you work on repealing or downsizing?
Well, the one that we just without going deeply into the war on drugs, it just is the most ridiculous thing we've ever done. And again, I'm going to go nowhere with it in a rural state like Iowa, but. But, you know, just like people have got to understand that we have the freedom to do something stupid if we want to. If I want to stick a needle in my arm, I should be able to. Now, if all drugs are legal tomorrow, if my wishes come true, I'm not going to stick a needle in my arm. I have no desire to do that to my body.
Mm-hmm.
But as Americans, we have the right to do stupid things. That's what it's all about. So that would be one thing. The other thing is I am just, you know, the Constitution, words mean things.
Mm-hmm.
And the words that are in the governing Constitution and the state Constitution, and especially the federal Constitution when it comes to the Second Amendment, I don't understand why every state is allowed to have their own law on weapons. The Second Amendment, the states, mm-hmm, shouldn't be able to supersede the Constitution of the United States. And it just makes absolutely no sense to me. The Constitution is very clear, shall not be infringed.
Mm-hmm.
That's not equivocal. That's pretty clear. And we've made some progress here in Iowa on that, but we need to take it to the next level. We need to convince people, and like you say, politically unpopular opinions. And yet, there is no reason that we should be infringing at all on the gun rights of the citizens of Iowa or any citizen.
Dan, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that the huge, huge benefits of that, you know, the fact that now anyone who's going to try to do a violent act is going to have to be uncertain. He's not going to know if somebody's armed or not. I mean, that right there, even if there is no other benefits, and there are many other benefits.
Well, there's so many benefits that, you know, I've been speaking strictly from a constitutional and a libertarian point of view. But if you want to talk about benefits, FBI crime statistics. If you do the math, you'll find, I think, that about 80% of the gun murders committed in the United States are committed in the areas with the most restrictive gun laws.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why do you think that is? Because they know that the guy they're sticking up or whatever doesn't have a gun. Why do they go into the schools? Why with their guns? Do you think they'd go in there if they thought there'd be six teachers there shooting back at them? I mean,
mm-hmm,
it's just so common sense, it's unbelievable. So yes, the every possible argument is there, both from a libertarian, from a constitutional point of view, and from a just plain common sense point of view.
And I think that is just so absolutely fundamentally true that I think really when people start to learn about that, there's going to be just more and more and more people saying, listen, we need to get rid of these laws. We need to make sure that we can actually protect ourselves, protect our families, protect the students that we're looking after, protect just anyone. And that's going to lead to I think, some pretty big changes
in
both
the
perspective.
And I think it is already happening. More and more across the country, people are realizing, and of course, you know, we know what has happened since Obama's been president with the gun registrations. They've gone skyrocketed through the roof. But I think it's also not just because of President Obama, but because people are realizing the word is getting out that if I have a gun, I'm much less likely to get to be a victim of gun violence.
Mm-hmm. So. I think that's absolutely true. Now, before we run out of time, I just want to say, so if somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, they can just go to lp.org and your information's up there. Is that correct?
Yeah, the beginnings of it. The beginnings of it, and also on Ballotpedia, my name is on there, and we will be adding to both of those sites as we have more information. We will have a website, we will have a Facebook presence, we will have all of that stuff, but one of my sons, who is my campaign manager, is still working on that stuff.
Awesome. All right, Bob, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us today and for sharing your perspectives and also making your plans for what you'll do when you win absolutely clear.
And I thank you very much.
Guys, we just finished talking with Bob Boyle. He's running for House District 20 in Iowa, and you've heard him talking about bringing, doing the first stage, which is bring these ideas to light, things like ending the war on drugs, getting rid of all these gun laws so that people can be safer. Now, here's the thing. Sometimes the first step and the final step of actually making a thing happen isn't necessarily that big. The distance between the time where the first person started to pass a bill, a constitutional amendment to lower the voting age to 18, and the time that it passed was just not even that long. See, a lot can happen very quickly in politics, but it requires us to actually work. It doesn't happen by just hanging around. It requires you to run for office or volunteer or get involved. And if you're ready to do that, if you're ready to get involved, please go to lp.org/states. Get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. And it is one of the most exciting things that you can possibly do. I run for office several times, and it's just been such an amazing learning experience. It's been a lot of fun. I've met so many interesting people. But that first step is up to you, lp.org/states. Thanks for listening. We just finished talking with Bob Boyle, running for Iowa House District 20. And I'm your host, Arvin Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvin Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.